James, when we talk about nuclear power, a lot of folks have a phobia about it, radiophobia, as your article terms it. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. But before we do, what is the prevalence of nuclear power in the United States and around the world at the moment? What does it contribute to our electric grid?
I think it's about 10% of the world's electricity. About 18% of U.S. electricity generation comes from nuclear power. When you compare that to about 60% comes from fossil fuels in the U.S. and 21% from renewables, roughly equivalent to renewables.
You point out in your article, which we're going to talk more about here shortly, that nuclear power has the ability to not only meet our energy needs, but do it simultaneously with reducing carbon emissions. Could you elaborate a bit on that? And if that's the case, why don't we do it?
And it was certainly the case that in the mid-20th century, I think the vision for power in the United States was that we would be mostly powered by nuclear power. It's, as you mentioned, it's one of the only energy sources that doesn't produce any significant carbon dioxide emissions, but is also affordable and reliable. So it doesn't suffer any of the intermediacy problems that renewables do for only being able to produce when it's sunny or when the wind is blowing. But the reality is there's a lot of fear of radiation in our popular culture. There's Godzilla movies, Three-Eyed Fish from The Simpsons, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There's this fear that it's going to lead to birth defects, which there's actually no evidence that radiation exposure leads to birth defects in humans. But nevertheless, we have all these fears in popular culture. And it turns out that some of this fear comes from the science of how we study radiation.
Talk a little bit more about radiation and your article, Myths and Facts in Radiation Risks, A Simple Solution to Remove Obstacles to Nuclear Power. You'll tell us a little bit later where folks can read that. Talk a bit more about radiation and the term radiophobia. It is a common term, but not one that I would venture to say most people have heard of before.
It's certainly the case that high doses of radiation are bad for you. If a nuclear bomb goes off in your city and the explosion doesn't kill you, then the high doses of radiation that occur certainly can kill people and can cause cancer deaths in particular. But much less is known about what occurs at low doses of radiation that we're exposed to really in our everyday lives. There's sources of radiation coming from within your own body. If you live at a high altitude, like in Denver, Colorado, you can be receive pretty significant doses of radiation over the course of your life, or if you take a CAT scan. And so it turns out that there was kind of a change in the scientific model that was used, how human beings will react in terms of cancer from low dose exposure to radiation. And it turns out that a lot of the modeling assumptions that go into these human health risk assessments turn out not really to be based on science, and they conflict with the basic evidence we have where, if you look around the world, where people are exposed to fairly high doses of relative radiation just in their everyday lives. But it's actually grounded in this more of this precautionary mindset where scientists, they wanted to put an end to above ground nuclear testing in the United States. And so they developed models that were much more conservative or stringent or would assume risk was present even in cases where there wasn't really evidence it was.
When we take a look at the impact of public policy then on the development of nuclear energy, James, could you tell us a bit about the role of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and are the policies they are following actually really preventing the further development of nuclear energy?
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission uses the kind of modeling assumptions that I'm talking about, and they admit that what they're doing is it's a policy choice. It's not a scientific choice. They use models of radiation risk that assume that even at very low doses of exposure to radiation, that there's a risk of cancer associated with that. And they say that they're doing that because it's a more conservative approach, or kind of better safe than sorry might be the way you would think about it. And so this leads to increased regulatory costs. It leads to, you know, considerable costs in building nuclear power plants and putting up safety protection and reducing that the amount of radiation that workers could be exposed to or the public who might live near nuclear power plants. And that sounds great. It sounds good in theory, right? Better safe than sorry. Except the fact is it the costs become so high that it puts nuclear at a disadvantage relative to other energy sources like fossil fuels. And it leads to a fear that radiation is causing harm when there actually isn't evidence that people are being, that there's an increase in cancer deaths associated with this. This mentality in our regulatory apparatus can lead to real harm. And a great example is what happened in Germany, where they phased out their nuclear power plants following the Fukushima accident in Japan, and they started substituting coal-fired power plants instead. And that led to increased pollution and estimates of increased deaths associated with the coal-fired power plants. And even in a case like Fukushima, I mean, there actually weren't any deaths associated with the radiation that emitted from the power plant during that episode, but there were deaths from evacuating, or a couple thousand deaths from evacuating people from the area because of fear of radiation. So it shows you that sometimes better safe than sorry actually isn't safer.
There is the development of these small modular reactors as an alternative to the larger plants. What is a small modular reactor?
These are nuclear power sources. You can think of, in a sense, we've had small modular reactors for a while. They power nuclear submarines. And the idea is that we'll bring more of these on, and they don't produce as much power as a traditional nuclear power plant that we've kind of recognized as from, you know, the 1960s, 70s, when most of the plants were built in the United States. But they're safer, they're smaller. The new technologies are not prone to meltdowns. And even if something were to go wrong, they're just, because of their size, there's considerable less risk associated with them. And so there's been great innovation in this area, and there's attempts in Congress right now to try to speed up permitting of these small modular reactors to bring more of them online. Especially, it can be especially useful in rural areas where you could have a single building or community powered by a smaller reactor like this. But even so, we haven't had many of these approved in the last few years. And there was a project in Idaho, I believe it was, just recently. They were planning to bring on some of these, and the costs were just getting too excessive, and they pulled back.
We have been talking about nuclear powers, and specifically talking about myths and facts when it comes to radiation risks, that a research paper written by James Broll of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, where he is a senior fellow. James, tell us a little bit about the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Also, where can folks find you on the web?
Competitive Enterprise Institute is a free market libertarian think tank located in Washington, D.C. You can go to cei.org and search for radiation risk, and my paper should come up. My name's James Broll, B-R-O-U-G-H-E-L. You can find me at James Broll on Twitter.
James Broll of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. James, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you.